10:15. So, good morning, everybody, and welcome to our office deployment for the Elite session. My name is Jeremy Chapman. I'm a senior product manager in the office deployment team at corporate in Redmond, Washington. So, I've flown down here with my partner in crime, Yoni. I like to think of myself as kind of Whistler in the Blade context. I create the tools. He uses them. He doesn't look like Blade, though, but basically, he's the one that's actually doing this Elite deployment stuff in the field every day in Australia. And my background, I come from an IT service management background. I used to work for an outsource provider, worked in Europe and China for many years. I was part of the MOF team, the Microsoft Operations Framework, Windows Server System Reference Architecture, built the original business desktop deployment, which transmorphed into Microsoft Deployment Toolkit with guys like Mike Niehaus, who are here this week. For the last few years, I was the Windows deployment guy. So in the last 18 months, I moved over to the Office division, because what I really do during my normal day job is I'm designing and planning for Office 15, the next version of Office deployment tools, and how that looks. So we're doing a lot of great changes there, a lot of great optimization that we can't talk about today. But just to give you a heads up, the Office 15 features will be great. And today we're going to talk about Office 2010. And I'll let Yoni introduce himself.
Thanks, Jeremy. Hi, guys. My name's Yoni Kirsch. I work for Fast Track Technology in Australia. So Fast Track are a optimized desktop Windows and Office deployment consulting firm. And I'm also Microsoft VTSP for Windows and Office deployment.
What is a VTSP, Yoni?
A VTSP is a virtual tech solutions professional. So I work with Microsoft to provide technical information to enterprise customers who are looking to do Office and Windows deployments.
And Yoni's literally one of our guys that we call, even globally, when we need help with customers that have problems with deploying Office. So even though he's down on an island in the southern hemisphere, way out of the way in terms of flight times and whatnot, he's one of the most knowledgeable guys that we have from our corporate perspective to go to for especially Office compatibility work that we have. We've got some great resources on MCS, but Yoni's also quite strong there. And all the deployment customization, which is why we flew him out here to do the session and do most of the talking, actually. So,
is that right, Jeremy?
Exactly.
All right.
So, in terms of what we're going to talk about today, basically, I'm going to do my initial hand-waving rant, you know, talking head Microsoft person thing. And then we're going to go into Office compatibility. We had a great session earlier this week, actually on Monday, that Curtis Sewin did. He's in the room here. In terms of the compatibility challenges that people face when they're moving from an earlier version of Office to the newer or newest one. He goes into a lot of the details there. We're going to touch that a little bit here, but this is really meant to be the part two kind of in terms of that series of sessions. We're going to go into the actual nuts and bolts of deployment and configuration management of the Office clients. The compatibility stuff we'll touch a little bit. There are a couple of good quotes that that we've found out over the last couple of years by having our own Office compatibility SWAT team, our own team of MCS consultants that flies across the world and tries to help customers. We found a couple of great takeaways from that work, and we'll share those with you. And also, we're going to go into deep dive about all the different deployment tools. So we have a lot of different options. Office is probably, in terms of deployment flexibility, one of the more flexible and configurable pieces of software that you can deploy. So there are many options in terms of deploying as part of your image, deploying from Office 365 file sources, deploying as part of a System Center Configuration Manager standalone deployment. We're going to show the app model inside of Config Manager 2012. So we have a lot of content here in terms of how you can deploy Office, and we'll even show how to do some automated deployment of, say, Office 365 clients by extracting those and putting those into a deployment share and putting those as part of your standard Windows image-based deployment. So all these things we'll try to get through in the next 75 minutes, and then when we're done, if we have time, we'll take questions, but we're going to try to do this in complete scenarios using our elite deployment guy, Yoni, to help show that off.
I guess, Jeremy, the takeaway from that is that Curtis's session was all focused around how to know when you're ready to deploy Office and how to get from your current state to the state where you're actually ready to start thinking about deploying Office. And now we're going to take over from that in this session and talk about, okay, once you've made that decision that you're ready to go, how do you get from that decision point up to a point where you're actually deployed?
Sorry, excuse me. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. So for the folks at home, if you're listening after the event, we are now adjusting Yoni's microphone.
So no one was hearing anything that I'm saying?
I think they were in the room.
Here we go.
All right.
I need to move it up a bit. I can sort that out.
So Yoni was talking about great things just now, if you're watching at home. Very, very profound statements about deploying Office. But we will recap all of that at the end, so.
Again.
There we go.
There we go. Now you sound nice and loud. All right.
Real good? That's better.
Yes.
All right. It's really loud now.
Yep.
So, okay, so to kick it off, Jeremy and I were thinking about what kind of tools, what demos we can put together in order to help demonstrate the different capabilities in terms of Office deployment and show you what's kind of capable. So we realize that Office deployment can be a little bit tricky and a bit complicated from time to time. So we thought we'd go out and try and find the most complicated Office deployment environment that we could, just to put a bit of extra stress on ourselves. Let's see what we came up with.
All right. So we're actually going to be installing Office from inside of an airplane as part of this. We're not bringing the airplane into the room, but we will be showing how that works. We'll be testing the limits of a tablet and what it can do in terms of touch and getting really automated deployment scenarios to work in the air.
Right, exactly. I mean, Jeremy called me up and he said he wanted me to talk about Office deployment in the cloud, so here we are.
Took it a little bit literally.
I've got a bit of an interesting hobby going on there, so I took it a bit literally, didn't
I? But unfortunately, there were no clouds in Sydney on that day.
Yeah.
All right. So, one of our top compat resources for the company, and I've got probably the other top compat resource in the company sitting here, Curtis, he went out and he's done a lot of customer visits, flown all over the world, you know, all of the continents, basically. He lives in an airport lounge and in airplanes most of his life. Gets to the customer site typically, and he says, "Hey, I'm here to do application compatibility work. What's your problem?" I'm like, "Well, we haven't tested it yet." Once they start testing it, typically it all just works with very few exceptions. That's what we're finding. So a lot of people equate the Office compatibility to like a Windows or IE6 to IE8 or IE9 type of compatibility work, but it's not usually as hard. There were a few cases here, the woman in the front here with macros and things that were especially built in the 1990s where things might present some challenges. But for the most part, things just work much better when you compare it to a Win32 or a IE compatibility exercise. So one of the better quotes isn't on the slide is Chris Jackson was saying, you know what they really need when I get down there is not me to go and fix stuff because things generally aren't too broken. Really what they need is somebody like Tony Robbins who can go down and motivationally speak to them and get them to start. Because once you get started, for the most part, your applications, your files, your add-ins, those types of things will work with very few exceptions. It's not like moving from IE6. It's not like moving from Windows XP into Windows 7 or Windows Vista at the time when we were doing a lot of UAC and those types of issues or Quirks mode and IE and all those things that we're doing around getting IE6 compatible browser applications essentially to work. This is much easier in general. As I said earlier, Curtis had a 75-minute session on this and all the different approaches, methodology, processes, the ways to prioritize, triage all the files, the add-ins, the applications that you have in your environment, and really work through that issue, those issues. But generally, in terms of technical issues, things that you have to fix, it's typically quite small. So you have any color to add to that? Have you seen anything, Yoni, when you're going through?
Look, I mean, when it comes to migrations like this, there are always going to be edge cases. You're always going to find that access database that hasn't been looked at for 23 years, or that's probably a bit long, but maybe 15 years. And those kind of things will no doubt crop up from time to time. But for me, the real takeaway on the compatibility topic is that, for the most part, if you created a document in Word 2000, in Word 2003, then and you go to open that document up and work on it, that document's going to work. So there are certainly, like I said, some edge cases around macro compatibility. Most of the macro compatibility issues that we've come across so far are actually related to two things. Firstly, to 64-bit macro compatibility, which is a whole other topic entirely. I'm sure that probably all the people in this room will be looking at deploying Office 2010 in its x80 in its 32-bit form, and so a lot of those issues, even the ones that get identified by the compatibility tools, will be related to those 64-bit macro compatibility issues that just aren't going
to
come up.
And just a word to that, we are looking at x86 or 32-bit Office as still the standard, and I can even say confidently from an Office version next standpoint, it will still be the standard because it's a chicken and egg thing in terms of the add-ins and the customization support from ISVs to extend Office. So we need to make sure that Office retains itself as a platform. And right now we're at the point where 32-bit is the standard recommended flavor of Office that you will install on both 32 and 64-bit systems. It's sometimes hard when, for example, if you're doing Office 365 and you enable users to self-install, the gut reaction, the knee-jerk reaction of anybody who's not really in IT and doesn't know about things like Windows on Windows 64 and that there's actually 32-bit emulation inside of Windows 64-bit, they're going to install the 64-bit version of Office. But if your company has add-ins that you're using, then those things won't necessarily work, or they actually won't work, if they haven't been written for native 64-bit compatibility. So we're still recommending 32-bit right now, and that will be even in the near future as well.
Documents, editing documents, and that kind of thing. Whoa.
Wow, he just turned back on. All right.
All right, we're doing good. So from that point of view, if you've got documents that are being opened and being edited, then and you're saving them back in their original file format, then those links aren't going to break. So I think it's quite a good story still.
Yep.
All right, so down to the actual technical details of deploying Office. So the tools that we're going to go through today are everything that you need to get from we've decided to deploy Office right down through to Office has been deployed. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Office bootstrapper, what the command line arguments are and where you should be using each of those. We're going to talk about the Office customization tool, how you can use that to create silent installation packages that will be customized for all your SOE requirements. We'll talk about the config.xml file and how that augments the capability of the Office customization tool, when you should use the Office customization tool versus when you should use the config.xml file. Jeremy is going to talk to you about security for Office, group policy, and the security compliance manager. We're also going to run you through the proofing tools and the multi-language packs for those of you out there who are supporting multiple languages, both from a language UI standpoint and also proofing languages, dictionaries, thesaurus, that kind of thing. We're going to talk about some of the UI customization, the aesthetics of the ribbon, and how you can customize the appearance of that ribbon and then roll those changes out through your image or through your Office deployment. And finally, we're going to roll all of those six components up together, and we're going to show you how you can use Microsoft's deployment tools in the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, as well as System Center Config Manager, to take all of what you've learned from the tools that we've got, put it all together, and actually roll out some real-world scenarios.
All right, let's get started.
So, What is the Office Bootstrapper? So I think just to start off with, I would like to just quickly go through the Office installation media. I'm sure you're all quite familiar with it. There's a few things that I would like to point out just to explain how you can identify different types of Office media, which ones you want to be using for your volume, high volume deployments. And then I'll switch back and I'll just go through some of these different command line options. So let's jump over to our demo machine here. So what I've got here is a folder that contains all the Office 2010 installation media. A couple of things worth pointing out. The first one is this. There's essentially three categories of Office installation media. The first is retail media. That's box product that you might buy off the shelf or download from a retail standpoint from the internet. The critical thing to understand there is that box product cannot be used for any type of volume deployments. None of the deployment tools that we're going to talk about here will work on box product, so it's pretty key that you can identify box product if it somehow made its way into your environment.
The other critical point is basically how activation works. So activation for box product is a perpetual key. So what happens is it will actually go to the internet, it will get a PID key that's sent back down to the product and remain active for the duration of the survival of that machine and the hard drive and the hardware, as long as it lives, right? The other thing is that we're binding the activation to the actual hardware footprint, not just the hard drive. So when you think about KMS activation, it's set up for imaging. It's set up for multi-deployment scenarios. It's activating against your KMS host or multiple activation key service. And KMS is key management service. I didn't enumerate that. But basically, you're managing the activation in-house. And what's happening with KMS is it's going to continually reactivate and rearm itself inside of your KMS environment. And after 180 days, it will go out of an activation state and go into notification mode.
What happens then, Jeremy?
In notification mode, I just get a stripe on the top, but I'm not basically restricted in terms of what I can do with the product. So I'll have an ugly bar, essentially, in terms of using it, mm-hmm. but because I can't talk to the KMS host. So we often have these cases where I've got a man in a cave, or I've got an oil drilling rig, or I've got a spy who's out in the field doing stuff, and how do I do this? Well, we can run it without talking to the KMS. There are other ways to do activation in these completely edge cases where you can't talk to a KMS service. But the main point is that's fundamentally way, way different than how retail activation works, where we expect an internet connection to be there and we expect a return call of a PID key that's going to give me perpetual activation on the client.
I guess so, to summarize the volume activation piece, if you've got machines that are able to connect to your corporate network at least once every 6 months or 180 days, then those machines should be activated using the KMS method, and I'll actually go through that in the next step that we're about to talk about. Mm-hmm. If you've got machines that can't contact, or you wouldn't be able to rely on those machines to contact the corporate network once every 180 days, those machines should be activated using your MAC key that you can get from your volume
licensing. And one last note to this, the MSDN and TechNet bits, as you've got the Pro Plus WW folder kind of highlighted, mm-hmm. there's a lowercase r next to that WW, which means that even though it's Professional Plus, it's still a retail activation set of bits. So you don't want to use the TechNet bits when you're going to do your automated and volume deployments within your organization.
Exactly. So back on what I was saying before is that if you want to identify whether or not your the bits that you've got are volume bits, the easiest way to go about that is that line right there. So essentially, if you've got that admin folder in your bits, then you've got volume bits. That admin folder, if you were interested, actually contains the Office customization tool and the other tools that we're going to use later on down the track. The other noteworthy folder that Jeremy touched on is the Pro Plus WW folder. So this folder, there will always be a folder in your Office media that has whichever edition of Office you have. So if, in the case of Professional Plus, we have Pro Plus there. If you were working with Office 365 subscription meter, you'd have Pro Plus Sub. And likewise, if you were licensed for Standard and you were rolling out Standard, you'd have Standard.
Yep.
So all right, so that's a quick look at the actual Office installation media itself. Obviously, the Bootstrapper is setup.exe, which we've got right there. And it's got a couple of command switches that we'll go through really quickly. So the first one is the admin switch. The admin switch is used to call the Office customization tool, which we will use to create silent installations. So I'll go through that in a minute. It's called withsetup.exe/admin. The next one is the admin file switch, which is used to then actually deploy Office to your client machines with the MSP file that we created recently.
So one fun fact and note here, if you drop all your MSP files into the updates folder, by default, our setup runs and installs all of the MSP files in the updates folder. The last one alphabetically of the MSP files that you've custom created will win. So it will go in and install, and then it will install the next MSP of what you've customized. Say you've got different app selection sets, like we're going to show in a minute, where I've got the marketing set of apps, which might just be Word and PowerPoint, and I've got the finance apps, which might be just Excel. And if I go through, then basically in the marketing versus finance one, the marketing one will win if I don't specify the MSP file, if I just drop it in the updates folder. So it's important that you use this switch correctly and actually have the MSP file in a location outside of the updates folder.
So the trick there being that if you don't want to have to call the admin file switch, then you just, generally speaking, would only put one MSP file into the updates folder, and then that's the one that will get picked. If you've got a whole bunch of different configurations, then we would recommend putting them into a separate folder in your installation media and then calling them as required using the admin file switch. The next switch is the config switch. This switch is used to call a config.xml file, which we're going to go through in a little bit, but that's the switch that you need to call it with. The next switch is the modify switch. So if you already have an Office 2010 installation on the machine and you want to make changes to that with the config.xml, so it might be the case that you've already rolled out Word, Excel, and PowerPoint to your entire fleet, and you now want to add access only for certain people. So you would use the modify switch to add the access feature state to the installation once Office is already on the computer. The repair switch is fairly self-explanatory. Just make sure that you identify the product that you're going to repair. In this case, Pro Plus, Standard, whatever it is, else that's not going to work for you. And then likewise, the uninstall switch, I think, requires no introduction.
Well, and just to make sure that you've got the right SKU at the end of that.
Absolutely. Command. So once again, the key here is that you need to make sure that when you use the modify, the repair, or the uninstall switches, that you call the correct SKU on the end of those. And that's a fairly complicated one there at the end. It just puts a few of them together.
Yep.
All right. So why don't we take a look at how that looks from the cloud?
All right. So he actually has Office installation running. You can't see the tablet.
It's a bit hard to see the tablet screen from here, but we were actually running an Office installation whilst doing aerobatics just there.
All right.
So the Office customization tool, as I touched on before, is the tool that we use to do the bulk of our customization to our Office deployments. So let's just jump right in and take a look at how it looks. So, like I said before, we start the Office customization tool by using the setup.exe, and I'm just going to call it straight from here. Let me just get that out of the way. There it is, setup.exe, and we can actually call that with the /admin switch. You could do that from a command prompt as well. It's my shortcut.
It will eventually come up.
There it is. So if we create... You've got the option there to create a new customization or to open an existing one. In this case, we'll create a new one. There's literally about 4,500 settings that can be configured through this tool, so I'm not going to obviously go through them in that much detail today, but what I might do is just give you a really quick overview of, say, what a standard silent install might look like in a corporate environment. So the first thing you might do is go in here and set your company name. Your installation path can be configured there as well. Network sources can be configured if you wanted to have multiple installation sources. This is the spot here where we can configure our KMS activation or use a MAC key. So that was where I was saying you can configure those two options from there. And I'm just going to accept the terms and conditions get rid of the completion notice and set it to basic. So that, what that will do is it will remove the user interaction from the installation and have it run silently.
And one burning question I know that a lot of people have right now is, will Active Directory-based activation work with Office 2010? Anybody have that question? Okay. Well, I did. Actually doesn't work. So Active Directory-based activation is something that right now will work in Windows 8 that we are building into the next version of Office. So you still need to have a KMS service around, even if you're planning to do AD-based activation. So like from a long-term point of view standpoint, Active Directory-based activation is something that we see as a long-term thing that people probably use after this set of releases. But for the short term, you will have a KMS service probably instead of the Active Directory-based activation.
Absolutely. So all right, so moving on, we can configure what actions should be taken with previous versions of Office that get found. We can add additional command lines to be run before or after the installation. We can configure security settings and modify setup properties. One that I normally put in here is this one here, which says auto-activate. Oop, I spelled that wrong. And we set that to 1. What that will do is that will cause the Office installation to automatically activate itself with the KMS server. As soon as it completes, that will stop any user notifications being popped up.
Because you have 30 days of grace, and after 25, we'll start notifying the user that he needs to activate.
Absolutely. So one other thing that I like to set here is under the miscellaneous section, which is this suppressed recommended settings dialog. So that's going to remove that prompt that normally displays on first load that says, do you want to use Windows Update? Do you not want to use Update? Because I'm going to presume that we're doing that through
WSUS or System Center, something like that. Manager or something.
Okay. So we can do a lot of custom stuff in here around adding files and adding registry keys, and we'll go into that a little bit later after we look at ribbon customization. And the last noteworthy point in the Office customization tool, I feel, is that we can also configure our Outlook profile to connect to our Exchange server or whatever mail system you're using through Outlook. And that will become really relevant, especially in our Office 365 scenario that we're going to talk about later, as you'll see. So what do we do with this file once we're done? We just save it back into our Office source folder. If we only had the one installation, like I said, we'd just put it in that updates folder. If we had many, we could put them somewhere else and call them with the / admin file switch.
You probably don't want to go to the documents folder, though.
No, probably not the best idea there.
All right.
So, all right, so that's the Office customization tool. So how does that differ from config.xml? So as you can see, if you've got a basic set of requirements, you're doing a single on-off install of Office 2010, the Office customization tool is probably all you ever need to look at. Where it gets tricky sometimes is when you've got multiple languages to deal with, and when you're doing modify actions. So if you already have some set of Office 2010 applications installed on a machine, and you want to add or remove Office components to that, then you need to use a config.xml file to do that. So an example of that might be, there we go, so I've got one there. So if you were to call this config.xml file with a / modify pro plus / config config.xml switch on it, then what this would do, it would open up the existing Office 2010 installation, it would run a modify action on it and install Access and all of its child components onto the machine. So those are really the kind of edge case scenarios. I use config.xml really frequently to do exactly that. So I might have a customer that I'm working with that says, okay, we want Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook on all of our machines, and then we want you to give us a command line that we can run through SCCM that will add or remove all those additional components, Access, OneNote, Publisher, whatever the additional components were, and then we will use those command lines and call them against different Active Directory groups or whatever the circumstance might be. So really that's kind of the chief scenario that I'm using config.xml for out in the real world. The other one is where we want to pre-populate the local Office cache on a client machine so that the Office installation will take place really quickly at deploy time. It might be that you want everyone to run the Office installation themselves so that they can do it at a convenient time. Mm-hmm. So something that we've done quite successfully in the past is run a config.xml file like this, which will enumerate out all the different components that we want to cache, And then the key there is that bottom line, if you can see, LIS cache action equals cache only. And what that does is it says, okay, don't install Office, but go onto the local machine of each computer that runs this and populate the C:MSO cache folder with all the installation files for those components that we've enumerated there. What that will do is place everything down on the drive. We come along later, either the user or through a deployment mechanism, we click setup.exe, and the deployment will take essentially half the time because we've already got all the media cache
there. We don't need to copy the files in MSO cache. So back to your bootstrapper analogies. Basically, what setup is doing, one of the first jobs it's doing is copying all of the source into local MSO cache, and then it's executing everything from there. So basically, you're getting halfway, or not halfway, but a third of the way done, maybe from a time perspective or whatever it is based on your network connectivity to get back to that source.
But without actually impacting the user's productivity and uninstalling previous versions and things like that. So, and that's the case with all Office 2010 installations, that they will always cache everything first into the C:MSO cache folder and then execute. And like Jeremy was saying, it can often be about a third or sometimes even more of the installation time is taken by running that cache. So if you can get it done ahead of time, it might make your deployment run a lot faster in the long term.
All right. So in terms of ribbon customization, so this is something that we've introduced in the 2007 days. We have extended it quite a bit in terms of 2010. Basically, what we're able to do with ribbon customizations is we can go in and add different features, customized ribbons. When I was doing talks about how to get Office experiences on iPads and on Android slates and these types of things, you know, when you have smaller buttons, for example, that's something that's very hard to navigate. If you're using something like Citrix Zen App to deliver Office to a touch device, this is something that will come in handy, essentially, to get you a customized experience that's perfect for that device type, you know, maybe not perfect, but close to being more usable in terms of having, you know, bigger touch buttons. So why don't we switch over to our Word file here. Basically, what I'm going to do is go in and configure a custom ribbon, show you where that stuff is actually stored. So if we go into Options, we can look at Customize Ribbon. And inside a customized ribbon, what I can do is I can create a new tab. So I can put the new tab in. Let's just we'll name our tab to maybe TechEd or something. And then I can drop components into that TechEd tab. So what I can do right now is I can go in and I can just take, let's say, the delete button. I'll add that to the tab. That's in a different group. I can add another group if I wanted to, but I'll just stay with the one group. The cut and the copy, and maybe email to that tab. And now what I can do is click OK, and I will have this custom TechEd tab. It's got a couple of functions on it.
Sweet.
But the interesting part is that it's actually sitting here inside of a folder that we can take and replicate and, you know, provision that out to other users then in the future when we start automating the deployment scenarios. So in terms of our location of where that file is, it's in the hidden app data directory. Oops. Local and inside of Microsoft and the Office folder. And then we have this brand new Office UI file that I was going to try to open with Notepad, but it's a little bit tricky in Windows 8 as we learn to use Windows 8.
Just double click it.
All right. So let me try an app on this PC. Hold on a second. I will go to Notepad. And there we go. So it's just got a small set of essentially basic XML, if you want to turn on Word Wrap, and a small set of commands, the things that we actually just imported. So you see that we have our new group, we have our name, you know, our control ID, the cut thing that we've just done. We've got all the different controls that we built into our Office UI file. Basically now, once we customize that to our likings and we get all the stuff that we want in there, let's say it's a Contoso branded or a Phoenix Foundation branded tab with all of our add-ins, all of our customizations, then we can take that and we can actually import that into the OCT and the MSP file that we're going to create and standardize that across all the machines that we're building.
So I guess from the basic standpoint, if you can establish that custom ribbon that you want and it's the same for everybody. You could just take that file, and I'll show you later how you can copy that into your Office installation. If you wanted to get really technical with it, and you've got a good understanding of programming in the XML schema, then you can actually pull that XML code apart and add and remove components from it on the fly, and that's something that we've done programmatically in the past, where we've said, okay, well, here are the XML components that we want to add, and then at the deploy time of Office, we've run a script or a program that actually generates that Word.Office UI file on the fly based on particular criteria, and then push that into the installation. So it can be as straightforward or as complex as you need it to be.
Yep.
So that's all well and good to do those kind of ribbon customizations while you're standing up here on stage. But as one of my senior engineers from FastTrack discovered the other day, it can be a little bit more difficult in this scenario.
He looks a little bit too happy doing this, I think. I don't know.
It was just, I mean, he got his ribbon back, right? So yeah. He didn't have to go and reconfigure it all. I think that's probably what he was happy about.
True. All right. So it works even at altitude.
Yeah.
So multiple languages. So this is another thing, and we'll go through some of these scenarios to get all this stuff working. So Office can be installed in multiple languages. Now the thing to remember here is that you've got the concept of multi-language packs, and basically what I can do if I want to is do a base install of English and then put the multi-language pack on top. We don't really prefer that because not all of the things like the LNK files are going to be localized in the correct language. So there's another way to do this where basically I take that language pack itself and I extract all the contents of the language pack to a folder, take the contents of that folder and copy it into my Office installation source, and basically in that setup.exe root structure that Yoni was showing earlier, all of those folders that had, you know, Word.Wordenus and Excel.Enus, those are all the MUI packs essentially for English US on top of the base Office install because Office is language agnostic. So basically, all of the real contents, the real meat of what is the Office installation package is actually in that Pro Plus WW folder, and all the other stuff gets layered on top. So if you think about how we're doing it internally, for example, at Microsoft, we have 5 language support essentially inside of our package. Each language is adding about 200 or 300 megabytes per language, and we copy in all of those files so that you can see all the different folders of the languages that we support. Then we can call that with the config file, and actually say what language we want installed, or by default it will match the language of the Windows operating system that you're installing too.
So Jeremy, are we talking about the proofing tools, the dictionary thesaurus tools inside Office, or are we talking about the actual UI, the ribbon and the help content?
So this is just the UI right now that we're talking about, but when we talk about other UI things that we can do, if we want to do a minimal set of UI changes, there's this language interface pack which is available for the, I would say, tier 2 set of languages, if you're going to classify them, that basically gives you Office UI in the appropriate language, but maybe not all of the things like the help files, et cetera, have been translated into that local language. So the preferred option is to put language pack files into the source folder. The second preferred way would probably be to layer on the language pack on a base English installation, and the LIP, the local language interface pack, gives you basic language customization and application against the language that you're installing to for the UI. The proofing tools are one extra thing inside the dictionary, inside of the proofing engine of all of the Office apps that allow you to proof documents that are in other languages. So by default, we try to guess what the most appropriate pairings are in terms of the proofing tools that go with Office. But if you're in a country like Switzerland, where you've got 3 national languages, and you've got a different set, you know, if you're in Geneva, it's going to be French, and if you're in Zurich, it's German, you might not have the right set of proofing tools applied to those different languages, and our assumptions might be off. So what you can do is actually add proofing tools into the mix, or you can just modify the way the proofing tools are applied.
Absolutely.
We'll show that through the config file commands here in a second.
Right.
Actually, we should probably animate this slide and show them all the different ways, and we can go through it. So as I mentioned earlier, if I install just, for example, here's the Japanese language pack on top of a base English install, what it's going to do is look and say, hey, there's Office installed. Do you want to install Japanese? That's probably not a good thing unless you speak Japanese. So what's going to happen is it's going to install all of its contents on top of the current installation, and it will work that way. But you'll have some base files, things that were written to the Windows shell, essentially, that do not get localized into Japanese. even though all of your Office is. So you want to actually import those files into the source folder. We're going to show that in a second. Also, in terms of what we're going to do with our config.xml file, here's all the things that we can do in terms of language management. And you can see that I can add multiple languages if I want to. So they're all child commands to the parent of what we're adding in terms of the product. Those are just the two lines that we have. So we're going to be adding English and French languages, for example, in this installation that we can switch from. And if we look at the proofing tools themselves, this is an interesting one. Each one of these proofing tools has a four-character ID, the 10252627. You have to enumerate every single one of the proofing tools if you want to modify our pre-selected list and define the ones that you do not want to install.
How do you do that?
So you actually download the entire set of proofing tools. You get all the IDs that are associated with them and say, okay, the ones that I want are not going to be absent, basically. The ones that I do not want, I have to put as absent, but I have to enumerate every single one of those things. And this is something we can only do in the config.xml file, and we can't do that through the MSP and through the OCT.
So why don't we take a look at how we can add those language pack contents into your existing Office installation source so that we could essentially build a multi-language Office installation media that we can use across our environment, and then how we actually customize our config.xml file to install particular languages in particular scenarios.
Okay.
Do you want to talk through that?
Go for it. So what we did in advance is we've downloaded the language packs from the online sources for language packs, these two ES Office and JA Office. Those are the Spanish and Japanese language pack files. Now, again, if I just clicked on them and ran them, they're going to run and try to modify the installed language of the Office client that's already on this host machine.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're going to do instead is actually run a command against it. So we're going to run our file name, and then we're going to use the extract switch with a colon and the path that you want to extract to. So let's set up a new folder, ES. And what that's going to do is give you a nice message in its native language of what it's doing. So it's, I don't speak Spanish, but it's apparently copying to the ES folder. When we go into the ES folder, let's go ahead and have a look. When we go into the ES folder, we're going to see all these language-specific MUI files that are in that folder. So these things right here, once we get the zoom it going to the right location, those things we're going to copy into the source file for the Office installation media. And basically, if you clicked in, go into one of those folders.
Okay.
On the English installation, you basically have the set of things that are language specific for, in this case, access, and the setup instructions, those types of things, in terms of how to get that working. So if we go into the English, file source, for example,
so if we
we'll
go into
see
that access,
we have the same types of files on the English native install. So basically what we can do now is just copy all that stuff from the Spanish folder into the ANUS set of source installation media.
Something like that?
Something like that.
And there's something pretty key that we need to do here.
We do not want to replace these files.
So what we want to do is we want to skip the files that are common, and that's going to make sure that our actual Office installation media remains, say, with English in this case, but we have that language support for all the other ones that we'll show you how to call that.
Yeah, so now this installation media will support both Spanish and English, and likewise, if we wanted to do it, we could do the same process for Japanese as well.
So let's just do that really quickly so we can see what an Office installation looks like with three languages installed.
And if does anybody here read Japanese? Is that a good... Okay. Probably a good string there, I hope.
I do.
From a localization standpoint.
I read Japanese. That says extraction completed successfully.
Excellent.
There you go.
All right.
All right, so there's our JA folder there as well. And if we do the same thing, we'll just copy all of that. We'll come along there and paste it in. And once again, we're going to skip. And if you have a look, I'll just bring that out now. You should be able to see that we actually have now an Office installation that, in essence, will support three languages. So the only thing to do now is use a config.xml file to determine which language we're going to actually install.
And again, by default, we're going to do a shell match on the Windows language edition and version that we have that we're installing against. So in the cases where I'm doing image-based deployment, where I'm calling in a different language for Windows, you don't have to actually define the language that you want to do, because we're going to do the shell match. as long as that language is present. If it's not present, and the reason why we didn't copy over some of the existing files, it's going to default back to ENUS.
You might have a scenario where you've got deployments that you're carrying out with an English language operating system, but you want to put a primarily Spanish Office installation over the top.
And we do that actually inside of Microsoft, because as you can imagine, when we can do more and more and more of these languages and try to get all the support into the one set of source files, we're pre-caching that file inside of a WIM to get called as part of the installation automation that we'll show through MDT in a minute or through System Center in a minute. And basically, you don't want to pack in every single language that's ever been released into the source files anyway. You're going to try to pick the top three or the top five that you use in the organization. You can still basically, after the fact, tack on the language interface, or sorry, the MUI packs for the language after the ENUS base has been installed for those, you know, less than 80% of your user base languages that you're installing too. And that's what we do internally, so we don't have to ship all the different languages inside of our WIM files. We still want to use things like multicasting and stuff to get those installation files out. We're not always installing from a file share somewhere because we don't always have the throughput. If I'm in Vietnam or if I'm in various areas where I've got poor connectivity to my distribution points, I'm going to want to pack that in and maybe use media to do the deployment and then do very, very light work that's going back to my distribution points or my management points.
All right, so let's have a look at the last step that we need to do to actually manually specify which language we want to install. So this is a config.xml file. In fact, a tip for young players. If you want to cheat and change something in your config, you don't want to have to call a config.xml file with your installation. If you find the one that's located inside your SKUs folder in your Office installation and you edit that, then that's going to be the default config that gets run with every Office installation.
So all these things obviously are commented out in the top that you may or may not want to use, but you know, basically you can use the commands that are already pre-populated above that are commented out by default.
And the lines that we need to add there, I've actually gone in and added those just before the session. But you can see it's just that add language component that we need to add in there. And in this case, it's going to install each of those additional languages we would normally call one UI language.
Or we would rely on Match Shell if we can.
Match Shell too. All right, so moving on.
So group policy and SCM. So there are, as Yoni mentioned, about 4,000 different settings. I can't go through all of them.
Why not?
If you can get me to my host machine at first, I'll go into gpedit.msc and show you some of those things that we do. So we have quite a few different options. Now the thing is, you know, when we look at all these, we've got all of our different Office files that we can possibly apply settings to, and we've got these 4,000 settings, and it looks very daunting at first, and the one setting that I've got highlighted here is the suppress recommended settings dialog, the one that Yoni showed, because I'm a deployment automation guy.
Great,
and that's
minds
the
think
one
alike.
Thing, yeah, that's the one thing that I want to kill every single time to make sure that the automation works and make sure that you know you are in control of your patching. But I've got all these other settings that I want to be able to look at and configure. Now, one of the problems with that is that there's just so much there, right? The default settings for Office are pretty good. I mean, that's one main takeaway that you're going to get is that generally the default set of settings that you get with Office, whether they're configured or not configured, are a decent set of settings that a lot of people can live with. But if you want to have an actual standards-based set of settings, and I'll ask Yoni to switch me over to my SCCM server here.
SCCM server?
Yes. Then you can go into a tool that we've released called the Security Compliance Manager, which actually gives you a predefined set of group policies for a normal, standard, you know, business environment. So what we've done here basically is we've got our Solution Accelerators team engaged. They go to, you know, various security organizations, NSA, NIST, et cetera, and they vet these controls out. So you can actually look through all the different policy elements and things that we configure by default. So here we only have a few computer security settings that we can configure, I think 17 to be exact. And we have, hold on.
Who's that?
Is that your airplane, Yoni?
I don't think so.
It sounded like an airplane landed on the roof or something.
Yeah.
All right. For those at home, there was a strange sound that happened on the ceiling of our session.
And continues to happen on the ceiling of our session.
But we'll try to talk through it. All right. So in terms of all the different settings that we have predefined for us inside of the Security Compliance Manager guide, we actually have all these things here that you can see that are either marked as not configured or, in this case, we have like the VBA macro notification setting, which we've enabled. So we can use basically the default settings that are inside of the Security and Compliance Manager set of settings that we have as our enterprise configuration. That basically makes it a lot easier for you because you don't have to go through all the 4,000 different settings and look at them. You can go through the ones that we've actually configured here, and you can see the ones that are customized, the ones that are default, and whether or not you actually want to use that setting. And all of the, you know, the descriptions and the details around the settings themselves. We also have, which is quite cool, the security guide for Office 2010 SP1, which basically goes into all the different things that you need to think about as to how to implement, you know, your security baselines, your integrity settings, all these things that you're going to see standardized across all the different security guides that we have. One of the biggest complaints I get is that people don't know this stuff exists. Anybody else not know this exists in terms of predefined GPOs? A few people, so hopefully I've helped a few people in the room.
Worth mentioning that this tool is not only for Office.
Oh, yeah. It's got a ton of other, that's a technical term, a ton of other products that we support. I mean, some of the really, you know, fundamental ones, the key ones, things like Internet Explorer, things like Windows 7, Exchange Server, all of those we actually ship baselines for so that you don't have to spend all the time parsing through those 4,000 settings. And this baseline isn't just something that we dream up. It's something that we actually go out and speak with customers and speak with security agencies to make sure that we get them right.
And so if you have a look here, you'll see there's a whole bunch of additional information about each of these group policy items that have been configured in the baseline, and details of why we would configure them and why we don't. And that goes a long way beyond what you see in the tooltip inside the group policy editor. So one of the first things that I like to do when I sit down to do an Office group policy setup for a customer is just press this button right here, export the whole thing to an XLS file, and then it looks like I've spent hours and hours sitting there documenting each of these settings that I've done. Oh, look, it turns out that by disabling this setting, it should have no impact on the default behavior of all Office applications, and I look really smart.
Yes, it's always good for a partner like yourself.
Exactly.
All right, so let's go back to our slide deck and keep going. Show some deployment. One last thing before we go off of group policy. So when we talked about config.xml, we talked about the OCT and the MSP files that we generate. We talk about group policy. There's a who wins in this situation type of order or hierarchy. Group policy, as you can imagine, always wins. Group policy is the enforced set of settings. The stuff that you're doing through the MSP file that you did through OCT, all of those settings are mirrored inside of OCT, essentially, we just saw in group policy and GP editor inside of the SCM tool. But those things are not enforced. Those are just preferences at that point. So basically, if I change the setting, the user can go in if he knows where to set it and change it back to whatever he wants. If I'm doing things that are protecting my data, protecting us from, you know, bad VBA or whatever I'm doing, this stuff the user can go and change. So we want to say that in terms of who wins in this argument, what should be enforced and configured, it's the group policy, not the MSP file. And then the other note to that, the config file will win if there's a conflict versus the MSP file. So the MSP file is actually last in the chain of who wins in a fight if there are multiple different settings set that are conflicting with one another. So group policy is the top, config file is the middle, and the MSP file through the OCT is the last one in terms of who wins.
So I guess an example of that might be you might want to set the default file save type for Microsoft Word to say, okay, by default, we're going to save in the legacy doc format. But you might not care if an individual user thinks that they've got everything under control and goes and changes that default save format to .docx. Mm-hmm. Conversely, you might decide that you don't want any macro code execution happening in your environment, and so you would not want to set that through the MSP file because the user could just go and re-enable that macro code execution right after the fact.
Or as so you saw in that, group policy. In that GP setting, we can configure the VPA code so it says at least inform the user that he's doing something that might impact the security of the organization, which most of them click through, but
yeah.
If your users have been trained not to just click through prompts, then that will actually help protect
so
your docs.
In a lot of cases, you might want to, for example, lock down ActiveX controls so that they will not run inside of Office, because you might say, hey, Office is for writing Word documents, not for installing ActiveX controls. And here's probably a good scenario where you might want to do that. right, we'll make our own fun.
Yes. Wow, so in the span of about 30 seconds, we saw some kind of an aerobatic maneuver, a tablet, and a cat video from the internet. I mean, how much better can I get than that?
Right, and all of that, and we still couldn't get that ActiveX control to execute.
If only Chuck Norris was the pilot. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
All right, I think we're one slide too far. We wanted to go back to the MDT.
Well, it looks like that one's come through first. We can jump over.
Right. Well, we can show. Oh, let's. We can do that one first. Let's do your MDT one. We'll build up to the SCCM.
All right. So just by a show of hands, could I get you guys to tell me who in the room is familiar with the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit? All right. So a good percentage of the room. Who's using the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit to do OS deployment tasks? Probably about half the people in the room. Has anyone considered that you might be able to use the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit to run some more complicated Office installations outside of the context of doing an OS deployment? One person. Is that what you're doing in production today? Right, okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
So potentially what we might show you, what you might see by the end of this is that there could be a combination of the two. You could use SCCM to initiate an MDT task sequence that's going to do some more in-depth and more clever Office deployment tasks. So why don't we have a look at how that comes together. All right, so we'll jump back over onto our server here. And what I've got open is the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. So let's have a look at, this is a scenario that I like to use quite frequently when I've got a few different options that I need in terms of what Office installation states are going to go onto each computer. So that scenario I was talking about before, I've got a base of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and then on top of that, I've got a certain group of users who we need to add access onto that installation for. I've got a certain group of individuals who we need to add Outlook for, those who have a mailbox, we need to put Outlook on their machine for them. And then likewise, I've got a group of users, say, that use Adobe Photoshop, and maybe they're not the brightest of folk. And so to avoid confusion, I'm going to remove Publisher from all the machines that have Adobe Photoshop installed on them. So let's see how that would look. So I'm going to create a new task sequence inside MDT. We'll call it 003. And we'll say we're going to deploy, I've got a caps lock on there, custom Office 2010. Move through that. And in this case, I'm going to select a custom task sequence because I don't want to use any of the OS deployment templates that the incredible Mr. Niehaus has created for us. So there we go. All right, we've got a new task sequence there. And if I open that task sequence up, we're going to notice that it's currently just has a sample step in here. So what we might do is we'll say we're going to install Office 2010. And I've already pre-populated the MDT deployment share with my applications. So let's just put Office 2010 in there. OK, great. Let's add another step. There it is. And we're going to install access for DBAs. And so actually, I'm just going to jump back here quickly. In this case, I'm going to run a command line to install it, because I'm going to use a config.xml file. So we'll say install access for DBAs. And in this case, my command line, let's just find our file location here. It's going to be inside our deployment share here in the applications, and there's our Office source. So we can take that there, and we can say we want to run setup.exe. And if we think back, we've already installed Office 2010 in this first step up here. So what we need to do is call a modify switch, and we're modifying Pro Plus, and then we'll call a config switch. And in this case, if we have a look in here, I've already pre-created some config files. So the one that I'm interested in at the moment
It's going to load up in Internet Explorer. Let's just try that with another application. Sorry, guys. We can open that with Notepad. We'll see that all this is doing is adding in that option state access files local. So all right, so that's the config file that I want to use for that. So my config file, and I'll put my the end of my command line on that one. And we'll just blast through the rest of these. We're going to likewise install Outlook for Exchange users. And we can probably pinch most of the command line from the other one. And all we need to do is select the XML file that we want. And then, of course, inside MDT, we can go and add our conditions in here that we might have already set a task sequence variable called exchange user. And if that task sequence variable equals true, then we're going to go ahead and install Outlook for those users. So the last thing that I want to do is I want to run another command line that will, in fact, let's just have a look at what my XML file is for that one. Okay, so it's remove publisher. So we're going to remove publisher. And once again, we could set the permissions up on that as we need.
And you could use these to do like the uninstall of, say, if you've got a 2003 client or 2007 client. You could add in custom line of business apps that expect Office to be present. You can do other things where you're maybe copying in stuff for use inside of your Office installation. You can do that within the MSP file or within the task sequencer. Both of them are essentially able to modify the way that the Office package, maybe your whole experience, will be delivered. So it's not just the single monolithic set of Office components, but it might be additional applications or additional items. And we're going to show that in a second when we do the Office 365.
Absolutely.
Means as well.
You might also use that task sequence, say, to push your custom ribbon content out and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So that task sequence would run just fine as it is. It would probably take about 10 or 15 minutes to run. So what we've done is we just recorded a video of that running and sped it up so that we can show you a little bit quicker. So off it goes. So that's straight away our task sequence running from inside MDT. And you can see our Office 2010 installation has kicked off already here.
And a great thing that you can do with this, by the way, is if you have software distribution that doesn't support things like dependency chaining, it requires a lot of heavy scripting to do one thing after the other, you might want to use a third-party tool, call in basically our LightTouch VBS script from MDT, because all I need is an elevated command prompt to say, call MDT's lighttouch.vbs. We'll automate all of the different calls so we get no user prompts inside of custom settings.ini, which is a folder, a file that does basically will take away all of the user interaction stuff that Yoni's already done. And that will basically do this custom install with multiple things that you're layering in on top of just that base Office installation.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you've got a third-party tool, you can call this. And it's all free stuff. So it's all very, very cool and very powerful.
And you can see here that installation is completed now. And the noteworthy part of that, and you'll see when we jump back to the start screen afterwards, is that our Access and Outlook components have been added on after the fact.
Yes.
Our fantastic start screen. You can see down the bottom there, we've got Access, and up the top on the next column, Outlook has been installed as well. So really, the scenario here is if you had a deployment mechanism that wasn't quite as complex, say, as SCCM, say you were using a third-party deployment tool, maybe you had a logon script that you wanted to execute your Office deployment through, like Jeremy said, you can just call lighttouch.vbs and go from there. All right, so next, I think we're going to have a look at a bit more complicated scenario that involves SCCM.
Not complicated. It's powerful.
Powerful.
Exactly. All right, so I'm in my SCCM console. Now, the cool thing with SCCM, if you're looking at, and I should be saying CM and not SCCM, if you're looking at Config Manager 2012 right now, the thing that we've introduced is the application model. So what this does is it kind of nullifies the need for a task sequence-based installation of all those components. So I can set up things like dependencies and supersedence. So if I'm going to try to install on, say, an Office 2007 machine, I'm going to try to put 2007 down, I can establish a rule inside of my Config Manager console that says, no, that's not the newest one. We've superseded that application. And you can imagine across the whole suite of, I've got customers that have up to 200,000 applications. Those are things that you're going to want to actively use, supersedence, so that people don't have the older version of stuff. If it's a vendor like we've got Adobe here that updates their application every 3 hours, you might want to have some supersedence built into that so that people don't install the wrong version. So the cool thing here is I've basically got a few components. So I've got Office 2007. What I can do is actually look at what I have in my deployment types. And what I've done with Office 2007, I've said, hey, this is superseded actually with Office 2010. So I've actually defined that inside of the properties. So I've got basically what I'm doing here in terms of getting it installed, how all of that works, how I would do the install slash uninstall of Office 2007. Detection methods, which are also quite cool. I can go, instead of doing that via scripting, I can go into program files x86, in this case, look for existence of a folder if I want to. If you import an MSI, it's even cleaner because it looks at all that stuff in the header of the MSI and finds all that stuff out for you. And I can determine the requirements and any dependencies that I might have. So in that case, I don't have any dependencies, but I do have basically a supersedence set up, as you can see through here on the 2010 version. So if I go into 2010, I have also my deployment type set up. I have also, you know, exactly where that fits. So here I've got my package defined. I've got exactly, where that is. I can localize the title of the package for the software catalog, which I'll show you in a minute. Here I've got a dependency here. So it's actually populated the dependency inside of the 2010 installer to say, hey, another app has been imported into my software library, and it's dependent upon me, and this is PowerPivot. So if a user says, geez, I really want this PowerPivot thing, and we've automated the installation of it, what's going to happen is we might see, for example, that he's got Office 2007, he's in finance, he really loves this PowerPivot feature, he can hook into SQL and do all that stuff. I have to uninstall Office 2007 as part of this, then I have to put in Office 2010, and then I can put in PowerPivot. I can't just install PowerPivot atop 2007, right? So it will automate all that stuff for you, so it's quite cool in terms of what it can do there. So we've done our distribution settings, the deployment types that we have. In terms of actually being able to do role-based installations, we have now here three different deployment types. So as you can see, I've got a standard 2010 install. I also have the marketing build, so it only includes PowerPoint and Word because marketers need nothing else. And I also have the 2010 finance build, which only includes Excel and Word. So I can actually customize based on, you know, where that user is. If that user's got an attribute I want to query against, if that user's in a different organization or OU, or if he's just basically anything I can query against through the AD infrastructure, I can say he's going to get this build. So I can dynamically choose which build which person gets based on their user role, which is quite cool.
So Jeremy, marketing guys can't write spreadsheets?
Sometimes if they're managing budgets and stuff, but usually they can do all that stuff inside of Word.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So anyway, so I can go through and I can show exactly, you know, where my content's being loaded to. And here I've actually got the supersedence defined in terms of this is actually superseding Office 2007. So all of that's actually part of this. So now I've got the entire thing defined. I've got exactly all the behaviors that I want. What I can do is show the user experience, which is also quite cool. If you can switch me to demo 2
mm-hmm.
on the VMs. We've got a little interesting video switching thing going up here because we're remoting into a server that's like 1 meter away from the slate. So we're doing all of our presentations from a tablet running Windows 8, by the way.
Due to VGA technical difficulties.
Exactly. All right, so I'm going to go into Software Center. Now, this is a new feature where basically the users get a pick list of all the applications that they can install. Cool thing is here in System Center 2012, the users aren't actually performing the installation, right? They are basically kicking off a task. The task is basically to say, in this case, I can either force them to install the component that they, you know, that we want them to have, or I can give them this pick list. I can use either a catalog, so they can go to an online HTTP site and look at them, or I can publish into Software Center. Let's say, for example, and we did this a lot at Microsoft, we have a whole slew of software that's optional. We want to be able to manage what they're doing and control all of that process and make sure it's running in the context of an admin, because the users may not be administrators. So all of this is happening through CCM exec at the back end in session zero, essentially in the system session. And basically what it gives the users the right to do is pick what they want. So I can define here, I didn't do it here, but I could define the icons that I want for these different applications. I could define the list of all the things that I want to do. In this case, the most complex thing that we have configured here is Power Pivot. So I'm going to install Power Pivot, and basically the user would just need to click install, and we're not going to sit and watch all of that. But what you'll see here, assuming that all of my wiring up to the System Center site is working, it will actually download two remaining components. So it's downloading the Office 2010 installer files and putting that into CCM cache on the system, and it's also putting in the Power Pivot component into CCM cache on the system. So that will take roughly 15 minutes or so to install, because it's got to download everything, then perform the install, which we don't have time to do, so we'll go back to Yoni.
Okay, so we've got about 5 minutes left. We've seen a couple of fairly interesting scenarios around how you can do chained and more complex task sequence-based Office installations outside of your OS deployment. We've also had a look at how you can use the power of Config Manager 2012 to chain your installations and set up your dependencies and supersedents and all that kind of good stuff.
Yep.
So, Jeremy, how do you think this relates to Office 365?
So with 365, it's interesting, because if you look at the actual process and the packaging of that, the assumptions were we're going to install from the cloud. What does that mean? So what the Office team did was we packaged that up as a .NET app that we install from the cloud. The problem is that the user typically would have to have admin access to make the install work, right? Because not all my users are going to be admins if they're in a domain. They would have to download about 700 megabytes of stuff from the public internet, which may be expensive if you're like Yoni from Australia, where you're paying by the megabyte. It's better to keep that on your local area network. So basically what we can do then is we'll download that package, we'll extract all the files, we'll import those into System Center or into MDT that we're going to show in a second. We've got to do some things in terms of wiring that stuff up to the Office 365 service. There are some other components, some other updates, the setup file, which basically wires up Exchange Online to the Office clients, and all of that stuff we can automate here through part of an image-based installer as a standalone software distribution.
Absolutely. So, given that we've got about 3.5 minutes left, I won't run through the whole process of creating a Windows 7 OS deployment task sequence. I definitely recommend you, I think there's still a deploying Windows 8 with MDT 2012 session going with Mike Niehaus. I feel as though that's later today. And I definitely recommend you either go along to that or download the recording so that you can get a bit more details on how to actually do OS deployment tasks through MDT. So, all right, so that being the case, I've already got my OS deployment task sequence set up here, and I just wanted to point out a couple of extra things that I've added in. And what they are is these three items here. The first is that we're going to install our Office 365 components. The second, which you'll notice is actually disabled, is the sign-in assistant. And the third, we're going to add the Office 365 link components in.
So just a word to the sign-in assistant. Basically, what sign-in assistant does is it installs the required updates that you need to connect to the Office 365 services. We've actually enumerated all those in a TechNet article that's, I don't know if we've got it open, but we've imported them into the updates folder at least, so you can automate all that stuff that it does to get the initial install to work. Then it actually is able to turn on Windows automatic updating to scope those updates down to Office, which in a managed environment, you may not actually want that. You might want to use WSUS or System Center Configuration Manager to publish your software updates out to users so you can test and validate those things.
Absolutely.
Also, it will do the wiring up of Exchange Online to the clients, and all of that stuff we can automate through the other tools that we were showing earlier, through our MSP files and through our customization. So here, we've already done that.
All right, so let's have a look at how that task sequence would look when we ran it on our client machines. So once again, I've just run this task sequence and sped the process up so we don't have to sit here for the next 45 minutes waiting for Windows 7 to install and then load those 365 bits on the top.
So what we're doing here, we just did a normal standard client operating system task sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go and load all of our Office components that we defined inside of that inside of the task sequence itself, the three things, actually the two things, the link and the Office client. We've done some customizations to the Office client itself. We've had to go in, first of all, I had to go in and extract what I needed. I had to go in and download all the different MSP files that were required to link up to the Office 365 service.
And where did we get them from?
Those are all from either the download center in terms of the extra components, or the Office installation file is from 365.
Yeah.
365. And then we had to add the admin folder, the administrative tools, what you can get for what's, as Yoni mentioned earlier, what's generally inside of the Pro Plus, you know, volume licensing bits, that admin folder. You can download that as the administrative tools for Office, take that folder and copy it into your 365 source files. So then that gives you the ability to use OCT and all these things to customize the installation of that. And we've done all of that work here. It's all fairly well documented in terms of TechNet and the guidance for Office 365.
And all those bits, including the sign-in assistant, the Office 365 Pro Plus bits, and the link bits, can all be downloaded. You just head over to your Office 365 portal, and you'll see there's a downloads link on the other side. So all right, so that's just about to finish. We'll see it's going to load up into Windows. Complete our installation. I'm actually going to jump this ahead a little bit just to save us a bit of time.
Very end, if you can.
Yeah. So we see we've got our Office installation now running inside Windows.
So I mean, the key point here is that you don't have to have a user log into Office 365 and download it and install it and be an admin and all these things. You don't want to do that. You don't want the admin to do it for the user, because that's not going to scale very well. So you can do it once, put it into your software distribution or your MDT, and then forget it.
Yep. And should we take a real quick look at how that all comes together on the way home?
Robin Zulu, X-ray,
yes.
Yankee, is a 2 hour.
This will be our last content slide.
This will be our last content slide.
Zulu Yankee, maintain 1,500, join crossing runway 29 right.
Turn crossing in runway 29 right, 1,500, Zulu X-ray Yankee.
So one note here, by the way, if you're using a tablet that's got an accelerometer in it, you can really, really make it interesting if you're doing barrel rolls and things inside of an airplane.
Yeah, you find that if when you start pulling G's in an airplane with a Samsung tablet, then the screen just starts spinning around in circles on you.
But
makes it really hard to
work. To how solid the OS and the hardware builds and the drivers are, that it actually doesn't blue screen or do anything too tragic.
And just a quick TechEd disclaimer here, TechEd certainly does not endorse the undertaking of Office deployment task sequences whilst trying to land an airplane.
Yep.
So there we go, we've got our deployments done, and we're home and hosed. My only complaint is that my tablet said it supported the 3Gs, and we took it up there and it didn't.
Exactly. All right. A couple people got it.
Yeah.
If you're watching at home. All right, so in review, we've showed how you can configure Office, how you can secure it, how you can do all the different tasks that you're going to use, the different tools that we've got. And with that, we'll wrap up our session. If you've got any questions, we're actually going to go to the Technical Learning Center, and we're going to go to our booth. After this, if you want to go to the Office booth, we've got these great chairs that are the that basically you can command all of Office 365. Very, very cool stuff down in the expo hall, and we'll be there for questions. So thank you for coming, and
is there related content?
See you the rest of the week. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Let's go to our tag for review. Mm-hmm. All right. There
is our tag there.